everyone, and welcome to the Planet FM meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6. My name's Judy and I'm an alcoholic and will be chairing our meeting this morning. Could you please help me to open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you for joining us this morning. Today our speakers are Jack, Eilish and Connor, and they will be sharing on their experience, strength and hope. Okay, Jack, would you like to start us off, please?
I'm Jack, I'm an alcoholic. So I guess my story with drugs and alcohol began at 15. For me, my story, mental health is like a very important part of my story. I got OCD and ADHD, and I became aware that I had OCD when I was about 13, 14, and that slowly picked up. It was very manageable at first, but yeah, it slowly picked up. And so I started drinking and smoking weed when I was 15, and that was a good time for the first few years, just everyone binge drinks in high school, so it seemed very normal, and everyone smokes weed every now and then. But as I said, my OCD picked up, and I went to Victoria University in Wellington, and my OCD just got worse and worse and worse, and the only way I could get any relief was through smoking marijuana. I binge drinks on the weekends. I used to drink in the bathrooms before I'd go out and socialise with people. I just thought it was the right thing to do. My mental health just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And I had a mental breakdown when I was 19 from smoking too much weed. And I'm a bit nervous there, but my OCD kept getting worse and worse and worse. It got to COVID, I developed germophobia, and that got bad very, very quickly. If you've seen the movie The Aviator with Leonardo DiCaprio, it was very similar to that. It got to the point where I was kind of stuck to my room. And the only way I could have any fun in life was through drinking and using drugs. I lost all my friends through my drinking and my behavior. I had a lot of anger and hatred towards people in the world because I was under so much stress and I was constantly battling myself and my thoughts 24/7. So I had all this anger built up and all this frustration, and I didn't know where to direct it. I directed it at whoever was around me, which was my friends and my family. And COVID happened, and that exacerbated my germophobia. I was smoking weed all day, drinking on the weekends, and I started to worry about developing schizophrenia from smoking too much weed. So I decided it was a better health option to switch to day drinking. And then things really popped off when I did that. That's when the self-harm started. Trips to the hospital, trips to the psych ward. I was doing a lot of LSD and other substances. And because, that was my life, right? Substances was my life. I couldn't have any fun. I wasn't happy at all. When I was sober, when I was withdrawing, I needed to be high or drunk, all the time. And yeah, I lost all my friends and I just became a loner and I just stayed at home and got on it by myself. And yeah, that lasted for a good few years, like 2020, 2022. Yeah, I like made multiple trips to the hospital, a couple trips to the psych ward with the boys and girls down there. And yeah, I was in a pretty hopeless place, you know. You know, I self-harmed, yeah, and I, like, try to end things a couple times. I was just in so much pain. You know, the way I viewed things was that I had this mental health condition, and I'd seen so many psychologists and psychiatrists, and nothing was working. I tried about 5 antidepressants. I tried other medication for it, and nothing worked. So my view on it was that I was going to get more and more unhealthy mentally. So I thought, and just die. So I thought I might as well have a good time doing it. And that's what I did. Until the second time I was in the psych ward in 2022, my mate from high school, he heard I was in there, and he was about a year and a half, 2 years sober at the time, through AA. And he was my drug dealer as well when I was younger, which was nice. But, and he reached out to me, and he, you know, he started taking me to Marijuana Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I only stayed for 30 days. This is when I was 22. I was still taking benzodiazepines every day. I was addicted to those, you know. When I was told I shouldn't be taking those, I left, and then I came back to AA 9 months later. Stayed for 60 days, and during those 60 days, I had a spiritual awakening. You know, I woke up one day, and my OCD, my germophobia symptoms had, like, gone. You know, and that couldn't have happened if there wasn't a God for me. You know, I hated the idea that there was a God when I was unwell and I was in the midst of my addiction. But yeah, I found God on that day, and yeah, I only stayed for 60 days, and then I stayed out for another 9 months. My behavior got worse. My life wasn't going anywhere, and yeah, 9 months after that, you know, I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the reason I came back was the quote, the Carl Jung quote, "You'll find what you want most in the place you least want to look." And for me, the place I least wanted to look, or the thing I least wanted to do, was get sober. I couldn't imagine having a good, fun life being sober. I really couldn't. But that quote, I really believed that quote, and that brought me back into the rooms. And since then, I've been in the rooms for just over 2 years now. My life's gotten so much better. You know, it's ups and downs, but the trajectory, like, it goes up and up and up. Like, it's night and day, the difference between, you know, me in the midst of my addiction and now. Like, so much better. I'm doing well in my study. I've got friends who I trust, you know. I'm not a loner anymore. My confidence has gone up heaps. You know, it is hard sometimes, you know. And the biggest thing I've learned about alcoholism and addiction is that it doesn't matter what the substance is. Like, the substance is just, like, a symptom for the underlying problem, which is myself, my brain, and my personality, and the way I think. I think that is the most important thing for understanding addiction, at least for myself. When I understood that, everything started to make sense. And, yeah, I'm a big proponent of Alcoholics Anonymous. Love the people in there very much. Yeah, and they're very much. And I'll just leave it there. Thanks. Is it 1 more minute? Oh, I'll go 1 more minute then. Not bad. I thought it was 9 minutes. But, yeah, so Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, before I came into AA, you know, I was just so alone. You know, I didn't trust anyone. Like, I always thought someone wanted something from me. But looking back on it, I was just kind of projecting myself. I really believe that the way you view other people is the way, like, you view yourself. You know, if I'm more trustworthy, loving and kind, I'm more likely to think the random person on the street is trustworthy, loving and kind. And if I'm a bad person, I'm more likely to be skeptical of other people. So, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I've got a conscience now that I'm in contact with, so I have to, you know, kind of behave myself and not act out and do the right things. And as long as I do that and stay sober and practice the principles and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, everything in my life will continue to get better. And I just love the people in AA so much. And I don't miss drinking and drugs. You know, I'm 26, you know, and I really don't miss drinking and using drugs. So I'll just leave it there. Thanks, Judy.
Thanks so much, Jack. Eilish, would you like to share now, please?
Thanks, Judy. Hi, my name's Eilish. I'm an alcoholic. So I'll start off from when I was a child. My upbringing was pretty good. I had, you know, a solid family, or still have a solid family, loving family, and, yeah, everything was great, but the thing that I couldn't quite grasp was how I felt inside, and I felt like something was missing, and I wasn't sure if other people felt that way, but I just remember something's a bit off, and I couldn't quite pinpoint it. And like, this is from when I'm like 5 years old, so quite young. Yeah, I guess I had always felt like that. I grew up a Catholic, and we'd be going to church every Sunday, and it kind of just felt like a bit of a chore, and I didn't quite get the connection that I guess it looked like everyone else had a good connection with God, and I just didn't quite get it. But eventually, you know, alcohol came into place when I was 15. The first time I drank, I remember it so clearly, like leading up to it. I got someone to buy me alcohol, obviously, because I wasn't 18. So, like, the sneaking around and the lying started happening. And he said to me, "You're not going to drink this whole box, are you?" I was like, "No, of course not. I'll share it with my friends." Because, you know, I didn't know what it was going to do to me. And long story short, I drank the whole box and I had so much fun. I was confident. I could talk to boys, you know, at a 15-year-old. Like, I felt like I had cracked it. And woke up the next day and did it all again. Got the same person to buy me another box. And yeah, and that was the beginning of my drinking career. And like the previous share said before, like it was fun, and it was great for a period of time. But towards the end of my drinking, I would say like my 20s, consequences were getting worse. My mental health deteriorated very quickly. I was in and out of respite centres. I ended up going to a psych ward, and that was what I thought was my rock bottom, but it wasn't, because I hadn't thought that the drinking was, you know, that bad at the time. So eventually drank again once I got out, and there was an event that happened, and I woke up the next morning with a black eye and a gash to my head. And I went to a nurse, and she said, you know, I got real honest, and I was like, you know, my drinking, I can't control it. It's just like, over time and time again, I've told my friends, this time I'll just have a few. And it just never ended up being that way. So the nurse said, you know, why don't you try AA? My son's in it, and he's 5 years sober now. And I just thought, well, absolutely not. I'm not an alcoholic. I'm not going to do that. And it took another 2 years for me to realise maybe I should just give it a go and see what it's about. I went to my first meeting in Mount Eden at 10 a.m. opposite Circus Circus, and all I was thinking was, oh my gosh, someone's going to see me, someone's going to realise, you know, they're going to see me for who I really am. And I walked into that meeting and I didn't hear much because my head was so loud, and I was just thinking, like, how have I gotten here to this point? I remember as a teenager we always used to, like, kid about that we're alcoholics. There's this one song by Homebrew, and it's called Alcoholic. And we always used to sing it, and then I was just thinking, like, well, now I'm here. This is a bit of a weird moment. Anyway, so I left that first meeting and I thought, you know, I didn't get anything from that because I was just so in my head. So I walked back inside and I talked to a woman, and she said, you know, here's my number. And there was just a moment of, I was putting in my number and she said, oh my gosh. And then we put our wrists next to each other and we have the same tattoo on the same size on the same wrist. And I don't know if that was my first moment of believing something is guiding me here for the right reason. I don't know, but I just went with it and I thought that was amazing. And she's been my sponsor ever since. She took me through the 12 steps, and as painful as it was, it's been such a change around, and it's been so beautiful. I've met so many people that I've been able to get really honest with, it's just, AA is my safe place, and it's just such a relief to find somewhere that I can get honest and talk about those things where I'm like, I just don't feel right. And the massive thing that I've noticed is that how I feel inside, like that unmanageability. Pre coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, I just felt super hopeless, super helpless, and I didn't see myself living past 30. And someone shared that in one of my very first meetings, and now I'm working for her. It's a bit of a turnaround, and how I feel inside is huge. I don't feel hopeless and I don't feel helpless. And if those crop up, then I know what to do with them. I don't really know what else to say. So I'll just leave it there. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Eilish, for your share. Connor, would you like to share now, please?
Yeah, sure. Hey, my name's Connor and I'm an alcoholic. So I guess when we talk about alcoholics, I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Like, there's many people who would deem me a hopeless case. A little bit of my background, I come from a pretty colourful family upbringing. My mum has 4 kids to 4 men, and my biological father is an addict alcoholic, and essentially every male in my family, from my generation and above, is an alcoholic and an addict. So was around a lot of drinking and drugging growing up, and I got into it at an early age, sort of 13. From 13 onwards was drinking every weekend and smoking marijuana daily, and that progressed throughout my teenage years. I had a couple of really close friends take their own lives between 15 and 18. And they were a little bit older than me. And after they had taken their own lives, I'd talked at their funerals, and their older friends sort of took me under their wing. But what that meant was at 15, I was hanging out with 18, 19-year-olds. So I started engaging in behaviors that, you know, they were at that age. And I managed to, what I've learned about addiction and alcoholism is that it's progressive, right? So I actually managed okay for earlier on in life. And it wasn't until my mid-20s that my disease has progressed enough to really take me out and sweep my feet out from underneath me. So at 25, I ended up, and also with I relate to the previous year's experience around believing that, you know, for me, alcoholism and addiction isn't so much about the substance that I use to manage it, whatever it might be. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be a substance. It can be a behavior too. But, you know, it's the way I think and the way I react to the world and what's going on around me and the way I view things, you know. That's what, where my disease lies. Like, I have the disease of alcoholism, and I can use near anything to try and keep it at bay or try and manage it, you know. So for me, in my mid-20s, I ended up picking up A-class substances, and that's when my life just really went downhill. I went to my first treatment center 6 years ago, and for the past 6 years, I have been coming in and out of AA, achieving like 3 to 6 months sobriety, and then going back out. And I've heard in the rooms, and like I've said before, it's progressive, you know, and every single time I pick back up, the consequences are more severe and more dire. And in the end, for me, around 2 years ago, I was put into a ward. And I was officially diagnosed as drug-induced schizophrenic. So they talk about, you know, many of us pursue like alcoholism into the gates of insanity or death. And that happened for me. I took it to the point of insanity. I was placed under a mandatory, like, judge court-ordered section 29. So, like, put under the care of a mental health team for a year and had to take mandatory antipsychotic injections. And, you know, I've had a lot of different rock bottoms, or what I thought were rock bottoms. I've spent time homeless, spent time on the streets, lost everything, stripped of all possessions and, connection and stuff like that. But even at that point, you know, I will still drink or use drugs, which is the insanity of my disease. And it wasn't until I was put on these antipsychotic injections that I really, really felt like the only way to sort out how I was feeling was to end things, you know. Like, it became the next step for me was death, obviously. And it wasn't until then, I think, that I really decided to put 2 feet into the program and start taking action, actions that I'd seen other people taking for years around me, but actions that I'd refused to take myself. And what that meant was I had to start getting honest, and start practicing the principles of the program, you know, and start taking some pretty basic actions to, you know, start engaging with what AA has to offer. And for me, that looked like going to regular meetings was really important. I had to get to a lot of meetings. At those meetings, like, sharing openly and honestly. And then I think the most important factor for me, which I never really, I had the same sponsor for 5 years. And he was a beautiful man. He died with 30 years sobriety. He died halfway through last year. And for 5 years, I tried to stay clean and sober. And the only thing he asked me to do, and the only thing he said I needed to do, was to pick up the phone and ring another alcoholic on a daily basis. And I refused to do that for 5 years. And when I started doing that 10 and a half months ago, my life, like, really changed, you know. So, like, I started creating connections outside of the meetings, which was just really, really important. Then I started engaging with my new sponsor in an honest way. Started working the steps, and life for me has changed really significantly. Like, I've essentially gone from, like I said, what many people would consider a hopeless case, into now being quite a productive member of AA. I've got a lot of connections. I've got a lot of men that I talk to on a daily basis, you know. I sort of, I can't go a day without speaking to at least three or four alcoholics. And it doesn't necessarily have to be about the program every time, but it's just about how we're doing, you know, like how my day's going, how their day's going, whatever's on top. yeah, it's just, it's a massive change for me. For someone who was, you know, alone, and I know a lot of us know the feeling of being alone inside those four walls, you know, like that was my, that's where I was in the end, alone in those four walls. And now it's just, yeah, my life is just so full and abundant. I'm off the Section 29, like I'm no longer on any antipsychotic substances or anything like that. My brain is healing and repairing. You know, I've just taken over a lease on my own home. I'm working again. Like life is really, really, really filling up for me. And I'm also a massive believer in the fact that like God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. I think believing in a higher power is essential, you know. And when I say God, I don't necessarily mean to ascribe any religion to it, you know. Like it's just something greater than myself, something outside of myself that is guiding me and looking after me, you know. So yeah, I'm a massive believer in the program. And not only because it's working for me, but because I've seen it work for countless others over the years. You know, like coming in 6 years ago, there was people that had 30 days or 60 days up just like me. And, you know, this morning I was having breakfast with one of them, and he's at 6.5 years, or almost 7 years, clean and sober, you know. And the difference between me and him is that he worked the program and took the actions from the get-go. You know, for me, I was a slow learner. So I'm a big believer in, you know, keep coming back. Because eventually, you know, for anyone, no matter how far down the scale you have gone, like, this program can bring your life back, you know. So, yeah, big believer in AA. Yeah, really, really, really happy with where I'm at the moment. And, yeah, that's me. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Connor. Right. Okay, that's all we have time for today, I'm afraid. But it's been wonderful having Jack, Eilish and Connor join us in the studio. They've all come in at a very early age, and it's awesome to know that they've got sobriety so young. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We are on air every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. here on Planet FM 104.6. If you wish to speak to someone directly, please call 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757, or go to the AA website at aa.org.nz, where you can find a whole raft of information. Could we all close the meeting now, please, with the Serenity Prayer? God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you.
Never miss your favorite shows again. Click onto planetaudio.org.nz.
Flooding can happen anytime. Are you prepared? Don't wait for the rain to start bucketing down. Clear those gutters, tie down loose items, and make an emergency plan to keep your whānau safe. A few minutes now can help save stress later. Stay ahead of the storm and keep your loved ones safe. Visit aucklandemergencymanagement.govt.nz/floods to find out more.
Radio Aqua. BRCA.
Listen for the latest news interviews
and the good music.
Listen to 104.6 Planet FM every Saturday night. from 8:30 p.m. for Radio Akwaaba.
Or you can listen online at planetaudio.org.nz/radioakwaaba.